It's been 3 months since violent clashes erupted in Ukraine's capital city, Kyiv. At the heart of the conflict is the Ukrainian government's decision to abandon their EU association agreement, seen by Ukrainian nationalists as a move to strengthen the country's ties with former ruling power Russia. Last month, the Republic of Crimea, an autonomous part of Ukraine, was annexed by Russia after a referendum. This inspired violence between Ukrainian nationalists and Russian supporters. With tens of thousands of Russian troops currently posted at Ukraine's eastern border, Ukrainians fear that Russian President Vladimir Putin plans to annex more of the neighboring former Soviet state. Thousands of miles away, here in San Francisco, Ukrainian and Russian communities are following the news from home closely. On Russian TV,
Ukrainian agmosalti chaknelivi tarabis gasa neitrala Vladimir Opeba Kievshi Amerikis vice president Joe Bidenisa da kveqnis pirveli
pirebi. And American and Western networks like the BBC and CNN are expressing the West's viewpoints, some reflecting the official U.S. stance alongside Ukraine.
We don't want this to be a larger confrontation. We are not looking for a U.S.-Russia east-west redux here.
That's Secretary of State John Kerry. Well, a movement that sprung from Ukrainian resistance of Russia is called Maidan, meaning square, representing the central square of Kyiv where Ukrainians protested before and after the overthrow of former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. The Maidan movement has a presence here in the Bay Area. Over the past few months, local Ukrainians have protested at the Russian consulate here in San Francisco, and they've petitioned State Senator Dianne Feinstein for sanctions on Yanukovych. Nick Bilagorsky is a Silicon Valley computer programmer who heads up Maidan SF. He came to our studios and I asked him, growing up in Ukraine, what was his relationship like with Russians?
The funny thing about me is I speak Russian as my first language.
Why?
Because in the eastern part of Ukraine, we're mostly native Russians. Like we're part of Russian culture. It's very close to us. You know, while the West in the middle is very nationalistic and Ukrainian, we have a mix of both Russian and Ukrainian. My father is Russian, so I can relate to that. I don't want to Vladimir Putin to destroy the bounds that connect our people.
If you can tell me about some memories you have, some childhood memories that you have with Russian friends, mm-hmm. Russian family,
well,
what was the relationship like?
All of my friends from Kharkov are Russian-speaking. You know, like most adults were in the Communist Party. I had a red tie, and I gave an oath to Lenin because I was growing up in a communist country where every child had to do that, to become a pioneer or a child of October. We had all these symbols, and we haven't thought of, you know, are you Ukrainian or are you Russian? We were all Soviet at the time, right? We were all the same. And my memories were going to Crimea with my parents for the summer and being there on the water, on the sea, and swimming in the sea and kind of enjoying the Crimea and not having, you know, any tanks around.
So it was a vacation destination.
Yes, absolutely. And we would go there frequently.
What would you do there?
Oh, it's like the beach, right? You go to the sea to swim and relax on the beach. It's kind of like Santa Cruz. It's the closest water you have to my hometown, Kharkov. It's the only kind of seaside that we have in Ukraine.
And so what was it like for you? How did you feel when, this unrest started to happen in Crimea? It started to become a word more and more in the news that, you know, people are following, and then the annexation. Mm-hmm. That must have been hard for you, like personally, someone who has a history of going there with your family when you were young.
Yeah. I didn't expect this. It came as a surprise. I didn't think Vladimir Putin would go that far. It is especially scary for me because I'm very close to my father, and he is in Kharkov now. And what I feel like may be happening is that Crimea is just the first step. He may not stop there. And the areas that are under pressure now, where he's putting his focus on now, are Kharkov, where my father is, and Lugansk and Donetsk, the three cities that are closest to Russia and have a large proportion of Russian population living there, Russian-speaking people living there. Like my father and me, we're both Russian-speaking. In fact, I only learned Ukrainian when I moved to Canada. That whole area you know, he can come and say, oh, it was always Russia. And just like that, we will have the tanks there as well. So it's very frustrating, it's scary, and I feel violated.
So you're here in America. How do you feel about the response so far by President Obama and Secretary John Kerry?
I've been trying to get a response from Obama and from John Kerry since December. I wanted them to act sooner to prevent this. So we actually, Maidan SF, we went and met with Dianne Feinstein's office, and we gave her our papers and petitions, and we encouraged her to get John Kerry, to get John McCain to notice this back in December. It hasn't happened then. But now I can see U.S. is doing something about it, and that makes me happy. Feel like I can influence something by appealing to the government here and having them make a difference. I'm afraid they're not doing enough, but I'm happy they're doing something.
What would you have them do?
Helping Ukraine financially through the IMF, through the U.S., through Europe. I think that's number one priority, as well as, you know, send food and other humanitarian assistance to the Ukrainian soldiers and civilians in the eastern Ukraine, like my father. Because those are the people who will have to contain Russian aggression if it continues, and I'm afraid it will continue, and they are severely outnumbered. So that's what I mean when I say help Ukraine. When I say put pressure on Russia, I think Obama started doing that with his rhetoric and with his sanctions. I think that he put visa bans on 7 people, and he's talking about freezing their assets. But I feel that we need to expand significantly the targeted sanctions that are happening to include most corrupt government officials, companies, and financial institutions.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. I'm speaking with Nick Bilagorsky from Maidan SF. So, Nick, President Putin says this is Russian territory. It always has been. It's part of Russia.
I mean, can we see through that? Can we see that he is lying? That this is part of Ukraine, was part of Ukraine. And if this is allowed to happen, then means there is no rules and no laws. If this can happen to Ukraine, then anything can happen to anyone. It's as if Mexico tried to annex California because there is a lot of Mexicans here and based on the fact that Spanish is not an official language of California.
What would you like to see in the coming months in Ukraine?
What I would like to see is a peaceful resolution of the conflict where both sides do something that is unpopular with their own people, but compromise and back off. Because I feel that there is still a way to stop this from escalating further, from more people dying. There's people dying every day now. There's people being shot in the Crimea. There is Tatars being tortured. So I want the violence to stop. I feel like we need, as an international community, to put pressure on Russia to back off, but also give them a way to back off while saving face, which is going to be challenging. But what I most want is for my dad to be safe in Kharkiv, for Kharkiv to stay Ukrainian and not have any military near it, which right now it's very close. 20 kilometers from Kharkiv is the Russian border, and on that border there is a huge amassment of tanks and military ready to step in at a moment's notice. We're waiting for war. My hope in the next month is that it doesn't happen.
Okay, so what's next here for Maidan SF?
Our main project is collect money. We've collected more than $25,000 so far and sent it back to Ukraine to families of the people who died and to the people who are injured on the Euromaidan protests. You know, there's more than 1,000 people that are injured. And I also wanted to say that we are actually planning to start a non-profit organization that's official that will do more for Ukraine. Assuming that things go well and the war doesn't start and, you know, we got the Yanukovych out, what are we going to do next? Well, the next step is rebuilding Ukraine economically, socially, putting the democratic values in there. So this is what the nonprofit would do. It's called Nova Ukraine, and we're planning through, will be a registered official charity so that we can do efforts such as festivals, IT projects, outsourcing, student projects, medical equipment projects to help Ukraine in other ways beyond this conflict.
One of the things that people who have conflicts back home have to think about and ponder and deal with is this idea that where am I useful? Because there's this pressure to come, you know, come back home, come to Ukraine, come to whatever country it is, on the ground with us, fight. But then there's this other side of, I am more useful to the cause here in the U.S. Have you struggled with that?
Absolutely. Actually, that's one of the biggest criticisms I hear from my Russian friends, saying, if you care so much, why don't you go back and fight with them? And they feel like by being here, I'm a hypocrite. And I disagree. I feel like I'm doing an important job here, that I don't know if anybody else can do this, collect money here, influence the U.S. government here, and represent Ukraine at shows such as this one. I feel like this is what I can do to help, and this is what I will continue to help.